success.
Oh my God. Hello and welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I'm your host, Jennifer Eden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
That celebration at the start of the episodes was us finally figuring out
how to make GarageBand make sounds.
Well, we didn't figure out why it was happening, but we at least made my computer not haunted. So that's exciting.
Exorcism successful.
So hello. This is episode 53. Yeah. I'm your host, Jennifer Eden.
And as I said earlier, I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
It's been a weird day, okay? We had to scrap episode 52, so we didn't scrap it. We just had to, like, make sure that the version that I uploaded was the one that I actually edited and, like, made make sense.
Yes.
which, if it didn't, that's going to be weird.
Yep.
So that's going to be another fun mystery, I guess, to deal with. So no new donors this week, but as always, we are eternally grateful for your support. Mm-hmm. If you don't feel like you can give us money on Ko-Fi, there is always leaving us a review on iTunes or on any other venue of your choice. We are always just delighted to have your support and feedback.
Yes. Thank you.
So in the last episode, which we recorded but have not yet posted because of the aforementioned reasons.
Yes.
So in that episode, we talked about how... we talked about R&Rs and we talked about career longevity. And we also talked about how our favorite kind of wine was no longer available. tragically, that kind of wine is still on back order.
Yes, I spoke to the nice lady.
I know that you're all
store.
Like riveted by our like wine
yes,
saga.
Yes, our wine saga. So Pinot was not a grand success.
It was not good.
So I talked to the lady at the store tonight, and she said that the supplier or the company Bevy is having problems with their white wine, and so they didn't have it. And so she'd been expecting a shipment for 2 months, so we're all very sad. But she did confirm that it is a good, cheap Pinot Grigio, so I'm glad that it's not just that we have
terrible taste.
She's like, no, that one's really good. I want it. I want to keep it in stock. So instead we have gotten Badisa today. And so it's much better than Pinot.
It's much better than Pinot.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. It's also Italian, so I feel like our terrible Italian stereotype accent is not warranted.
Mario
but
accent.
Yeah. Oh my God. Complete sidebar. So the Dallas Stars had their Halloween party last week, and two of them dressed up like Mario and Luigi, complete with driving around their like ridiculous hockey mansions in miniature cars.
Amazing.
And it was pretty great. So we asked and y'all delivered with some questions from Tumblr or Twitter, and also Tumblr, but mostly Twitter. And there was a couple of different questions about sort of queries and how can you tell whether or not an agent is open or how open an agent is. Let me read a couple of
these. Whether or not
they
respond. I think two of them are from the same person.
Okay.
I think she had a follow-up.
So Mary Rowley asks, I'd love to know this. Sometimes when I'm stalking Query Tracker, I see that an agent will respond to, say, 85% of their queries, whether positive or negative. Who are the queries that get no response and why?
I feel very called out by this tweet.
And then I feel like there was another one. Yeah. Oh, also Mary Rowley, if an agent is open to queries but responds to 0.01% and has no record of a positive response, what is the reason he or she is open to queries? So I thought we'd talk a little. Bridget had the idea that we could go back to sort of query how we do queries 101.
It's been a while since
it's been a while. I mean, we're not going to do any like query critiques, obviously, but we can talk a little bit about, you know, the various strategies we use or don't use and the various moods and humors which affect our looking at the query inbox.
Yeah, it's...
Why did you say you felt very called out?
Because I think that my percentage response on Query Tracker, which I do not check because I value my sanity and also my own opinion of myself.
I already think I'm garbage, so...
I know how bad
now,
I am.
Now, remember, in
queries.
That last episode, we told that listener to, like, be nicer to themselves. So we should be nicer to ourselves.
Yes, I know exactly what my problems are in responding to queries.
Except,
I don't need to know other people's thoughts on
it. Oh, except also they were mistakenly thinking that they were garbage, and we actually know that we're garbage. We have the actual facts.
So I feel like I think that my response rating on Query Tracker is about 85%. And I think that some of that is just because people don't necessarily update. Like, not everyone. Sometimes people don't put in when they get responses.
Yeah. I myself am very mystified as to how Query Tracker works, because I have never gone there.
Yes, I prefer to remain outside of that loop. But also part of it is that I am very slow on the things that I am thinking about.
Yeah. It's very easy to get to a fast no.
Yes.
Because we know that pretty quickly.
Yeah. It's the things where I'm initially like, you know what? This is pretty okay. And then I have to go back later and think about, okay, is it still good in comparison to the other things that were pretty okay from this month?
Because I feel like the fast things are like, yes, or no.
Yeah.
And then it's all the in-between things that take a long time.
Where if and I know there are some people, some agents who go in and do request all of those things that they are thinking, well, who knows, maybe about. But I find that I'm also far enough behind on my requested manuscripts, though I am up to the point where I actually tell people, the amount of time I tell them it's going to take me to respond is actually how much time it takes me to respond.
I'm so behind that I just can't, I can't even face it. Yeah, I'm closed to queries until January 1st.
We closed for August, and it made a big difference, especially because, you know, half of us were not in the office for half of August.
I was closed. I mean, you know, if I had closed for August, I was gone for most of August, so I can't really. There are so many other things that kind of come into it.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping to sort of, like, completely clear the decks.
Yeah.
Just, like, I'll sage out my inbox. Just, do some kind of exorcism, and then start 2019, hopefully, on a better note. I know. I ran into someone at Sirens, and she's like, I sent that a while ago. Have you read it? And I was like, no. She's like, oh, good. I need to revise. I was like, oh, thank God.
In that case, I will take it off my queue, and just send me an email.
Yeah, thanks.
Just send it
Find me. But yeah, so it's the things where, you know, we like the idea, but we're not sure if we love where it's going. We like the character, but we're not sure we love the world. Like, there's many situations in which we might like something but not be, like, ready to put a ring on it.
Yeah. And so sometimes it's I am currently, like, maybe I just signed something like this. Maybe my author says that they're going to that their next project that I'm going to read next week is kind of like this, and I want to make sure that there's, like, they're not going to be competing with each other.
Yeah. There's so many reasons why things could be taking a while. Also, we're fucking busy.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
And the things that really do take thought are the things that I have to, like, set specific times aside for and be like, okay, I really need to do
and those times,
crack down on those queries.
Those times are, like, at night and on the weekend.
Yeah.
And, like, in our quote-unquote free time. It's like, all time is free time when you're always working.
What is a weekend?
Exactly. It used to be a hilarious upper-class joke, and now it's like what is a weekend?
And so the things that, you know, a lot of the time I do go through first-round queries while something is playing in the background. So this is the reason I have watched The Great British Bake Off, like, four times through.
Oh, yeah.
Because
so soothing.
It's really good background. It's, like, it's energetic but not distracting, and I know what's happening, so I'm not, like, that invested in
and
the plot lines
anymore. And if you look up at the
screen,
it's someone staring at an oven.
Yeah, like, it's fine. I can look up,
like,
I can look down.
Is the bread rising? The answer is no. I can look back at my screen.
Yes. So that's really good for first round, but that means that anything that I need to actually think about gets put into a maybe pile. And I usually do about 50 of those a month. And I can't read 50 manuscripts a month. I can read 15 to 20 manuscripts a month. So I then need to cut that in more than half again.
Yeah.
And that's the part that really slows me down. Because partly it's just I do need to put some time in between it. And enough time that I'm not thinking about my initial reaction anymore and I can actually analyze it.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh, I love this idea, and I put it into the maybe pile.
Well, that's why, and that's also why I started, like, when I request things, I started doing, like, my notes and stuff while I'm reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I figure, like, if I end up passing on it, like, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if I end up offering on it, I want to be able to give them their edit letter right away.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that they don't have to wait anymore. I've already kept them waiting. I don't want to keep them waiting for more months, you know.
I was talking to another agent who said that he was working for a while at an agency that had a 2-week response policy. So you had to respond to queries within 2 weeks. I was like, oh my God.
Well, I'm sure that they also had things in place. I mean, if I was running a place like that, I would want to be like, okay, well, the first 2 hours of every day are query time.
Yeah.
Like, that is all you do.
Yeah.
or the last 2 hours of every day. Like, I would want to build that in if that was, like, a company policy. Oh, God, that poor man.
I think a lot of them also worked out of the office. So you do get to, like, structure your own time. And that's part of the problem is when you're in the office, things come up that aren't necessarily your business.
Yeah.
Someone else needs problem-solving help or something. Yeah. And so that gets in the way. Or, like, the royalty statements come in and you have to deal with that.
Yeah.
First week of September, I don't do anything besides royalties.
Yeah.
There's just so many of them. So, yeah, sometimes it's just, like, I probably do need to put some more rigorous query structures in place, but I've been trying to get my manuscript submissions under control.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of reasonable with them.
Yeah, you can really only work on... I'm still in the embarrassed and feeling bad about it stage. You know, there's only so many systems you can put in place at one time because, like, our jobs are so variable and, like, travel schedules and holidays and just the rhythm of the publishing year. Like, so many things conspire to, like, make everything terrible.
And when all of my clients turn in revisions at the same time, and suddenly
I have six manuscripts to edit right now.
Oh, no.
Like, how did this happen?
Oh, dear.
And also, I was thinking back to, like, the last time I had this many. I was like, actually, I think it was six. And I was like, why is it a cycle of six? Like, what is this?
Are these all the people that you sent edits to the last time?
No, some of them are brand new. If that was the case, I would have been like, I brought this upon myself. I've played myself. But so, you know, as far as her question about, like, why would someone who only responds to, like, 0.1% of queries, like, why would that person be open to queries? I feel like because they don't want to miss stuff.
Yeah, that's it.
And they're just responding to things that they really, really like.
Yeah.
We get FOMO just as much as anyone else.
Yep. And it's
a real bitch.
Because it's financial FOMO.
Well, it's financial FOMO, and it's also like so much of the time, like, when I miss something, it's because I didn't either have the time or make the time to read something.
Yeah.
And I'll never know if that person, like, I never really feel bad if I, like, talk to the person and they didn't pick me, because I knew that
it's
I,
like,
read
I'm
it.
Like, I'm sad, but I tried.
I'm sad, but I tried. But, like, if I didn't even get a chance to offer, I'm just like,
But why?
Everybody hurts. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it's, like, my own fault.
Yeah, and so that's part of it. It's just that you just don't want to miss out. I feel like that person would have a much better workload if they just closed, but you never know what's going to come in.
Yeah.
So
you never know. All right, let's look at that's enough of a refresher on how we do queries, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's see what else we got here. Liz writes, booze. I'm assuming that the booze is books. Like boo, like Halloween, not booze. She says, what about finishing? Because I suck at finishing anything but a bottle of wine, and I know I ain't alone.
Yes, I am right there with you, friend.
I love an artificial deadline. The one time I did NaNoWriMo successfully, that was very helpful for me because I was like, here is my arbitrary deadline to finish this thing that I was in no way, like, under compulsion to write.
Yeah. So I recently took up knitting, and I am pretty sure...
I did not know this.
Oh. It's a thing that I am doing in front of my television instead of playing phone games and giving myself carpal tunnel. I am actually turning that time into productive time and making myself scarves and possibly scarves for other people.
My client, Betty Harrison, knitted like 6 Afghans at Sirens.
Oh, wow.
Including a beautiful one that she donated to the auction. But she makes these beautiful, beautiful Afghans for a charity in Utah that assists with the teen suicide epidemic there because they have that super cheerful.
Yeah.
But, I mean, literally every panel, she was just like, clack, clack, clack. It was really cool. I mean, she was crocheting, not knitting, but it was very cool.
That's very fast. 6 and the time at Sirens.
Yeah. She made like 4 while we were at retreat. Like, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
I have one over the back of my chair, and it's my cozy office sweater. And she's like, well, it's more for like, it's more pretty than cozy. I was like, I mean, it works
it's
for me.
Cozy enough. Yeah. Sometimes you don't want something that's stifling. You know, you want a little bit of airflow.
Especially like in an office where it's variable.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, sorry.
But yeah, so I'm fairly concerned that I'm going to become that person who has like 6 unfinished knitting projects just sitting around their house because they lack follow through.
Simon S.E. Smith pointed out that actually the problem with the Sirens bags is that they are the perfect size for one knitting project, which means that they have like 10 years of Sirens bags with like various projects in them.
So I am kind of trying to keep myself to, I can't start a new project until I finish the old project. Mm-hmm. I think that that kind of helps. But it doesn't super help with, I have lost interest in this project. And how can I do, if I can't start anything new, then I just can't do anything.
You know, actually, interestingly, Leigh Bardugo talked about this in her keynote speech at Sirens, because she was one of the four guests of honor. And I'm hoping that she'll post her keynote speech, or that Sirens will post it or something, because it was a lot of the speech was dealing with kind of various myths that authors tell themselves, and you know, various sort of lies, and one of them was the myth of the big idea, about how like you have the idea and then there's like a sexier idea that comes into the, you know, you think it's really glorious and you know you go through the honeymoon stage and then this other hotter idea comes into the room and is like, but don't you want to be spending time with me? And then you have to decide like whether or not you want to incorporate the old idea into the new idea, or if you want to like leave the old idea with a new idea. I mean, I think that, I guess to go back to the actual question, think about ways to just make it easier on yourself. Like break it down into smaller pieces. Maybe don't think of finishing as much as you think of just like sitting down and working on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that novels are such a big project that maybe keeping track of how many words you approximately have left, as I believe Scrivener does.
Yes.
Some that might actually be really useful for you, slowly ticking through that.
Whatever you can do to kind of incentivize yourself. I remember I was clicking through V.E. Schwab's Instagram, and she has all these great things that she's used in the past to kind of like get herself to write more and keep track of her writing. And one of them was she did the stars on the calendar for a while.
Yeah. That's what I use.
I know. It's so beautiful. We just literally both turned and gesticulated at the same calendar.
As though you can see.
It's so covered in stars. She's done
that's
so well.
It's a very productive month for me.
Mine would just be like, fail.
See, the actually visualizing how many days I did work and how much work I got done is
really helpful. My
problem
is I don't have like a calendar that I can hang up anywhere.
Yeah.
I probably could, but like anyway.
You have an office in your apartment now.
Let's talk about that later. But so one of the things that she did was she blocked out, like she made a little chart where she had like the date, and then she would color in little squares, and each square that she colored in.
Oh, the bullet journal method.
Well, each square that she colored in was like 25 minutes.
Oh,
and it was
okay.
Like, oh, did someone just knock?
Oh, that's
oh, 1 second.
Hi. So she was tracking it by minutes
rather
than productivity.
You know, she just, you know, 25 minutes and then taking a break and then, you know, ostensibly doing it. And
so the Pomodoro method, just
exactly, but visually kind of keeping track of it. And then she did a little Instagram post with like the picture. I think it was the week of 25 minutes chunks, essentially. And then she wrote like, this is what I was able to do this week. And she was able to finish, you know, like a comic script and like a couple of chapters. And, you know, whatever you can do that will incentivize you to just keep pressing forward with the work.
Yeah.
And distract you from the bigger picture,
yeah,
I think is the other more important part.
Maybe something that would help you is writing the ending first. And then you have something you're working towards.
Yeah, you can draft things out of order. Write the things you're excited about first and then fill in. I mean, honestly, that's how I finished the one novel draft I've ever finished. As I was like, TK, boring plot shit. Sex scene, sex scene, sex scene. Fight scene, fight scene. Ending. Murder. This book was not very good, and no one will ever see it. But yeah, so I don't know if that, I hope that helps.
Yeah.
There are lots of like little tips and tricks on the internet available for you, but I would also caution against looking for those tips and tricks too hard, because that
becomes the stalling tactic.
Exactly. It becomes its own form of procrastination. Like the fact that I went out and bought a new notebook this week and started bullet journaling because I was feeling very stressed.
I'm the Pomodoro technique is so effective for me that I don't know why I don't use it every single day, because every time I do, I'm like, oh, this really worked really well. I got so much done. And then the next day I'm like, oh God, stalling again. What am I going to do? How am I going to get my work done? I'm like, use the thing that worked yesterday. So come on.
Yeah.
You know how to do this.
Yeah. And then your brain's like, but do we though? Your brain is an asshole and you have to trick it, basically.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. We're just doing, like, I guess, another all questions episode.
Yeah.
Why not?
Why not?
It's our podcast. We can do what I do. We can do what we like. Meddy asks for gossip and horror stories for Halloween. I was going to say, what horror stories do we have?
Oh, man.
I feel like, honestly, if we get episode 52 posted, that one thing from last time is going to be our horror story, because I'm still, like, really upset about that. All right. Your client, Lana Wood Johnson, asks, authors having opinions when it goes well, voter registration when it goes wrong, Chuck Wendig's recent Marvel ousting. I feel like we talked about this last time.
She hasn't been able to listen to it yet.
She hasn't been able to listen to it because we failed somehow, or I failed specifically in getting it edited.
The technology led us astray.
Yes, we blame technology. Damn you, Elon Musk.
Sidebar, I really enjoyed in the most recent episode of The Good Place when she's like, my good friend Elon.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Never mind. There's a joke about Elon Musk.
Sorry, I was
in
sirens. It was the opening night.
Oh.
So I couldn't see it.
I watched it on the internet over the weekend.
I was in sirens over the weekend.
Yeah.
I gave my paper. It went really well. I definitely cried like a lot. And actually, I have to give a shout out to my friend Jillian, who actually read the ending of my paper for me because I was like really overcome.
Oh, no.
I need to see a therapist, y'all. I know about it. But, like, I was just like, this is not cool. I thought I was being so clever because I had her read the quotes, because the quotes were what was like tripping me up. And I was just like, Connie Willis. And then she had to read the end of my paper because I am a mess. So I don't know. I mean, you should feel entitled to your opinions. You have them. Be honest about them. Don't hurt other people in your deployment of them.
Yeah. I think that's the important part.
Be nice to people.
Yeah. But, like, you also just, you don't have to hang out with people who are
awful
to you.
You also don't have to, like, have truck with people who are dicks.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's, yeah, I think I've talked about this before, but I'm pretty sure that the reason NBC decided to sign the last random season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine is just because they really like working with Mike Schur.
Yeah.
Like, they think he's brilliant and easy to work with and just, like, great. And so they were like, you know what? We missed out on this last time. We're not going to do that again.
Yeah.
So I think that that is really just a, that's an example of how things can go your way when you are a pleasant person to work with. And that doesn't necessarily mean being silent, because he's very opinionated on Twitter.
Right.
Not under his own name, but everyone knows who he is. Ken Tremendous.
Yeah.
So if it's like, he's very opinionated, and he's outspoken about issues. I happen to agree with him on all of these issues, and therefore... but it does, it means that you can have opinions as long as you are generally a good person to work with.
Yeah, what she said. So ZR Elor asks, how an agent's, or suggests, talking about how an agent's career develops over time. Unfortunately, I feel like that's one of those questions that we can only answer in like 10 years.
Yes.
Ask us in like year 5 of the podcast.
Yeah,
and then
you keep signing things and trying to sell things and then trying to sign bigger things and sell them for more money. And as your books earn out, you start getting a more reliable base of money from royalties. But that is a thing that can take many, many years.
Yeah.
So
maybe in the 5-year anniversary of this podcast, we can do like a how we've changed.
Yeah. We did float the idea of doing an episode with both of our bosses, since they know each other from back in the day.
Oh, that'd be interesting. We'll revisit this idea and see if we can do it.
Okay.
All right. Jim Ormond, whose little Twitter sub name is ruining his hiatus, asks, voice, what is it? How do you cultivate it? Great examples of it. And how the F do you bottle the X factor?
Oh my God, if I knew this, I would just stop being an agent and instead give lessons on how to write voice and then make a lot of money from it. Because I do not know the answer to this.
I mean, I feel like voice, the incredibly frustrating answer is like, you know it when you see it. And,
yeah.
And when a book is voicey, which is a word that I think we all thought was gross 8 years ago and now we just all come to accept, is when you feel like a story could not be told by any other character or in any other way.
When you can hear the voice in your head.
Yeah.
So I've been recently watching Schitt's Creek.
That's so funny.
Which is,
I've only seen like maybe
show.
Half the first season, but it's so funny.
It's all 4 seasons are on Netflix. It is extremely funny. It is really easy to get through. The 4th season got incredibly sweet in a way I was not totally prepared for, and I have a lot of feelings about it. Something I always think of in terms of voicey is after I've watched a couple of episodes of that show, my internal monologue starts to sound like the character David. It just Everything comes out in his voice.
Yeah.
Because he is a very specific kind of character with a very memorable way of speaking and tone and everything. And so you can like, it is very, very clear to me what he sounds like.
Yeah.
And so it sticks in my head.
I wonder if that has to do with, I mean, I've read authors sometimes talking about how, you know, they read, you know, their favorite authors and then they find themselves unconsciously mimicking their writing. You know, I guess maybe it's like finding that thing about yourself, like the way that you think about.
Yeah.
The way that you think about story and the way that you think about your characters that is distinct from everything else around you and deploying that as much as possible on the page.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just, like, I also notice this if I've been talking to someone else a lot is I start picking up parts of speech from them.
Oh, yeah.
The phrases that they use all the time. Yeah. And you start mimicking each other.
Yeah.
And that's another example of it. It's just the ways that people phrase things. It's why things... Certain phrases like spread through the internet.
Yeah.
It's because they're memorable and they stick to people.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, as far as how to cultivate it, I think just sort of let your characters be themselves and find that thing about them that maybe it's the speech tick, maybe it's the sort of like regional slang, maybe it's whatever that makes them who they are and distinct from everyone else in the story and everyone else sort of in the world and just kind of like use that.
Yeah. How can you bring their personality through in the way they narrate the story, whether that's first person or third person? That's kind of what you're looking for.
I think about the Rivers of London series, the Ben Aronovich books. One of the things I love is the way that the main character describes everyone he meets like a cop. Where he gives this very bare bones description of like their age, their approximate race, and like approximate social status, but it's this very dry, like, I'm a policeman, I am trained to look at these things.
Yeah.
And it sort of feeds into the way that he looks at everything, where he sort of looks at everything through his training, but also through his background, because he's biracial, he's from London. Like, there's a lot going on there that I think that convey voice in this really interesting way.
Yeah. Well, that's a good example.
Oh, God, I love those books. Ugh.
So good.
Ugh, so good. As far as like how to cultivate the X factor, that's something you can't cultivate. Unfortunately, other people decide that you have X factor. It's a dumb system and I hate it. But if you knew the way to cultivate X factor, you'd already be a bajillionaire.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. It's
like at the time that J.K. Rowling was writing a Harry Potter, no one wanted that book.
Yeah.
And it took a really long time, especially for audiences in America, to figure out that they wanted that book.
Yeah.
So.
And it was also partly just that children's books didn't make that much money. So they were very conservative about things.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's.
Yeah. X Factor is always going to be dependent on a bunch of factors that don't have to do with the book.
Yeah. But Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling has a very specific voice as well. Just the way that she injects humor into lines that aren't actually funny is a very specific thing that she's able to do.
I was actually talking about this over the weekend. I hope it's okay. I think it's okay to talk about this. So I went to Sirens. I went to Sirens Studio and then to Sirens proper. And we were talking about world building in one workshop. I believe it was, Justina Ireland's workshop. But we were talking about world building and I mentioned Harry Potter as a way of sort of distinguishing between sort of early Harry Potter, like the actual,
the middle grade version?
Canon Harry Potter. and like her kind of terrible late stage stuff, like all the movies.
The post book stuff.
And The Cursed Child, which I hate. Like I hate them a lot. Because I think that one of the reasons that the early books succeeded was because the world was very specific and the voice was very specific.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the reason a lot of the later additions to canon don't work is because she's trying to do too much.
Yeah.
She's trying to appeal to too many people. She's trying to make it too big.
And as someone on the internet pointed out, Nomadge is just about the most British kind of slang that you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
And she's like,
and that's supposed to be the American way.
Like, that's not how Americans.
I mean, honestly, my favorite post on the internet is always going to be like, you go to any like rural town in America and it's like, are they a redneck or just a wizard? you don't know. Like the impossibility of like magical secrecy laws in like a small town America, you know? So I think about that a lot with voice. Like the more specific something is, weirdly, the more people can find something within it to resonate with.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that's often where the humor is. That's where the poignancy is in very specific details. It's as you get too general, it starts becoming an idea and stops becoming an experience.
Right. Yeah. It becomes something that, like, you're reading rather than something you're feeling and experiencing.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And good question.
Yeah. We actually came up with an answer for that.
Oh, good job, team. All right. Okay. So, Claribou Ortega. We're recording this on October 30th, so...
So,
people
all
still
of
have
your
their
Halloween names are
still up. I'm not very creative. Honestly, like... I think that I can never do better than Gritalica, which is the name of, like, a Scottish, like, machine that distributes sand on the road in winter. So I can never move on from that. All right. So Claribou Ortega asks, can you talk about the complications with characters / worlds showing up across multiple books or series, if that makes sense? Oh, that does make sense.
Yes.
So there's two complicated scenarios, I feel. Mm-hmm. One is if the film rights have been optioned, and one is if they have not been optioned.
Okay.
In the latter, all you're worrying about is making sure that your other publisher, if it is indeed another publisher, is cool with you doing it.
I think that part of it comes down to how big this is.
Yes.
Like, if it's a major character, then that might be, especially if it's the same publisher, it's probably fine. If it's different publishers, it might not be. The question is, if it's the same character and the same publisher, are they going to want a book about that character?
Yeah.
But if it's something small, like Emma Mills, just This Is Our Now is the band that shows up in, the boy band that shows up in two of her books. And that's like a minor detail. And it's totally fine and just kind of loops them into the same world without being distracting or having information for one book that you might not have if you didn't read the other book. And so I think that that is very easy to do and just like not a big deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it's a major character, you get a little bit more complication there. And if it's the world, especially.
Yeah. Because oftentimes your option agreement or your non-compete clause will say something about you not publishing something like on these themes or with these characters.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be complicated. I'm not saying that it's impossible, but I heard this story.
Especially not impossible if your publisher turns down your option.
Yes, but no, but but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually heard this, I forget where I heard the story. It was anecdotally, so it might not be true. But I heard somewhere that Rick Riordan keeps trying to put Percy Jackson as, like, a side character in, like, other things. And the problem is, and this is where I go back to the film rights thing. The problem is because when you sell the film rights, you are selling the character rights. So it gets into this question of, like, you can't actually do that once you've entered into some of those film agreements.
Yeah.
Because they are buying the character. This is one of the reasons why Hannibal Lecter Clarice Starling can't show up on Hannibal.
Yeah.
Because they've optioned the rights to one book, but not Silence of the Lambs is already owned. So they own all those character rights.
Yeah. All of the characters who only appear in Silence of the Lambs.
Or Hannibal, which has already been made.
Yeah. So. Yeah. They may have optioned the rights to
Hannibal the movie, as opposed to Hannibal the TV show. Distinctions, they are important.
And that's also been the thing with Spider-Man. They had to keep making Spider-Man movies or the option on the character was going to lapse.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would lose the rights to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So that was part of why they made the Tobey Maguire ones and then the Andrew Garfield ones. And we were all like... Do we really need this many Spider-Men?
Must we? The only thing I've ever agreed with Eleanor Shellstrop about, I'm like, we don't need this many Spider-Men. Although Spider-Man Homecoming was adorable, and I will see the new one, and I'll be very excited about it. But that's kind of like a very general overview. There's a lot of kind of stuff that goes into it. But I would say that if you are planning sort of like a big shared world kind of thing, think about it really carefully, like what you're going to deploy into each world. And talk to your agent about how you're going to do that, because they'll have a little bit better insight into the specifics of your situation.
I would also recommend, not particularly in her case, but in general, don't plan spin-off books about secondary characters before you have an agent, especially before you have a publishing deal. If you are thinking about, oh, well, this character's really interesting, I can also do a book about them. It's like, well, maybe. If the,
well,
it might not, it might be really hard to sell.
But if the spinoff is but here's my sort of question about that is, like, if you have a story you can tell about that other character and you don't have an agent or a publisher, why not write that book? Like, maybe that's a better intro to the world.
Maybe. I'm just thinking about, like, sometimes it's hard enough to sell the one book without trying to sell
the extra books. But what I'm saying is, like, maybe that other character is a better entry into the world. You know?
Maybe.
Maybe that other version is better. I don't know. All right. I think the last one we have is, since we don't have any gossip and no horror stories for Meddy. Sorry, Meddy. Kellen asks, Kellen K.M. Spooky, S-Z-P-O-O-K-Y, asks, after your debut, how writing careers evolve, rights you can exploit beyond the book, multiple opportunities that might present themselves or that writers can seek out, writing books 2 and 3, etc. I swear this isn't for me, you asked for a topic. And then, of course, W.L. Goodwater replies, I like this, do this.
See, all of your clients are now chiming in with ideas based on their own lives.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
I suppose last time it was all my clients having questions.
They're taking it in turns, really. Yes.
Getting us from both sides.
So, I mean, I think, once again, I think we talked about this in the episode that has yet to be posted because of my own incompetence. But rights, there's like a lot going on in this.
Yeah, that is a
after
whole
your
topic.
Debut, I feel like the sort of blanket advice is to just keep writing.
Yeah.
And keep evolving yourself as a writer.
Yeah. I think also it's very useful to make connections with other people in your specific writing community. Partly this is so that you have other people who know what you're talking about when you need to complain about publishing things.
Mm-hmm.
And partly it's because you can help each other. I have clients who have planned events or tours with other people whose books were coming out around the same time. And that way you can sort of support each other and do events together. And you can boost each other. So that's also very helpful.
Yeah.
Keeping aware of the various things that are going on with your rights. Obviously, we all know about, like, film rights and foreign rights and audio rights and all that good stuff, which hopefully your agent is on top of. But yeah, I had a client ask me about what our first serial rights the other day, and it's like, yeah, that's a thing that we don't use so much anymore.
That's a name I haven't heard in 84 years. Although one time a former coworker of mine sold for serial rights for like $7,000.
Oh, so. Wow. Was it a major literary fiction and or nonfiction?
No.
Wow.
I mean, it was literary fiction, but I wouldn't call it major.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was still very, she was like, I was very startled. And I was like, all right.
Yeah. I feel like if you have a political nonfiction book, you're going to sell the first serial rights for a lot of money. But,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Most of the rest of us are like, please put this excerpt on your website, sir.
Wouldn't that be great? Don't you want to do that? So I guess, you know, other opportunities that might present themselves, you might get approached for work for hire stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You might become a more attractive prospect for work for hire because they know that you're like a person who has turned into a book before.
Yeah. And especially if you were easy to work with, they may want you to, for example, not pertaining to anything having to do with my own life, want you to ghostwrite a book. I'm not ghostwriting a book.
I was like, is one of your clients being asked to ghostwrite a book? Is this like, oh, okay.
If
it was like, you're being very bad about subtweeting if you're like, about trying to be stealth about this, if this is something you're trying to keep secret for yourself.
It's definitely not me. But yeah, if you were easy to work with and reliable and turned in a good product, they may want you to write other things. They may say, I want to buy your next book based on the first 5 pages.
Yeah.
Generally,
you may find yourself in that situation where you sell a book on a paragraph, like that other person that we talked about last week.
Yeah.
And
which is much easier after you've already done one.
Yeah. Which is why it was very suspicious when that person got like the debut deal.
Yeah.
On the strength of a paragraph. I think actually, do you want to talk about this like next time? Do we have a topic for next time?
Sure.
This feels big enough that we could talk about it next time.
Okay.
So we're going to, in true agent fashion, pass the book until later. We're going to star this on our inbox and think about it for a while. Thus bringing us full circle.
Some ideas.
All right. I think that's all the questions from Twitter. All right.
Tumblr.
So we have two questions from Tumblr. Cool Shades and On says, I know you always say to speak frankly with your agent, and I agree. Oh, sorry, that has already been answered. Huh. Just kidding. A different Cool Shades and On says, okay. Hi, guys. Two questions for you querying. First, what makes an agent request a partial over a full? In an age where we're no longer snail-mailing manuscripts, wouldn't it just be easier to always request fulls? The agent can stop reading whenever, but doesn't have to go through the extra step of asking for more if she's interested. Second, why do agents sometimes sit on a query longer if they might be interested? Wouldn't they want to move quicker in that case? Thanks, you're the best. So we answered part of this question earlier.
We did. And it's because we are indecisive.
And it's because life is terrible and life is stupid. Or what is it? What's the Cavalente? It's like, life is beautiful and life is stupid.
Yeah.
Read space opera if you haven't already. What makes an agent request a partial over a full? I always request fulls.
I do too, because for exactly the reasons outlined there, which is I can stop reading anytime I want.
But at the same time, I understand the rationale behind requesting partials, because if a book is going to fall apart, it is most likely going to fall apart in the first 50 pages, and you want to know that before kind of.
And it's sometimes easier. It's less commitment. So you might be able to set aside an afternoon and churn through all the partials that you have. And you can't really do that with full manuscripts. Whereas, like, you might be able to say, like, I'll set aside time on a Saturday afternoon to read manuscripts. And I'm like, well, I might get through three if they're not very good. Or I might get through one.
Yeah.
Depending on how the timing goes.
Yeah.
And so if you have partials, you can regulate your reading more easily.
Yeah.
You're like, these are only 50 pages. I can read all of these this afternoon.
Yeah. But it does feel like kicking the can down the road.
Yeah. You are eventually going to have to read the rest.
Yeah. All right. Dear Shipping and Handling, Cool Shades and On inquires, I was wondering about the benefits of finding an agent and publishing a novel while also self-publishing under the same name. I'm making around $60,000 a year from self-publishing. Mazel tov.
Nice.
But I was hoping to push that number higher so I'd feel comfortable leaving my day job. Do you think having one or more books traditionally published would help me find new readers? Is this something you see happening, or is having a self-published career a problem for traditional publishing? I think, say it with me,
it depends.
What's the genre you're working in? Do you want to publish the same kind of books mainstream? I feel like there's a lot of different questions. I mean, 60K is, like, not shabby, and congratulations for finding
a niche that works for you. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, what you may be able to do is approach an agent on the strength of your self-publishing work and say, like, hey, I've got all this stuff self-published. This is how much I make in a year. These are how many books I've sold. I want to break into, like, the big five, and I want you to help me do it. And as long as the agreement exists between you and your agent that, like, this is going to be one wing of your career and not the entirety of your career, I think that that's, like, a perfectly valid approach, because it can be, like, another source of income for you.
I do think it will work better if there is a difference between what you're self-publishing and what you are traditional publishing. And it's not just like, oh, I'm alternating romance novels kind of situation. I think if you're like, the self-published books are this kind of book and the traditional publisher
but
this
see,
kind
I
of
think
book.
But see, I think that it can be very useful in romance.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Where, you know, you might not have access to the big five, and where they're kind of used to the multi-book a year model.
Yeah. I think if you can designate specific lanes for them, it's still likely to be
I think regardless,
more
like, if you want to go down the route of, like, working with an agent, I think it would be it would behoove you to be ready to have the conversation with an agent about all the things you're planning for the year, and then they can kind of pick which ones they want to push for a big five publication so that you can still be working on your other stuff, but you can kind of balance that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
I think that, like, many self-published authors are pursuing this. Like, there's nothing I mean, that's the whole point of hybrid publishing, is that you have both tracks going at once.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much money it's going to add to your... I mean, and the money is going to come in much less regularly than your Amazon monthly check. But, you know, hey.
It's also... an advance is money you can count on. And that's something that's worth a lot.
Yes. And if you can get into that kind of situation, awesome. All right. So we have a question that I actually don't know how to answer. Mostly because it's been so long since I've listened to some of our episodes that, like, I don't know. Hi, Shipping and Handling. I'm a new listener and loving the podcast so far. Welcome. I haven't made it through your whole backlog yet, and I was just wondering if you would mind letting me know if you have any episodes that are more fandom-focused than others. That's a fascinating part of your podcast description for me, and I'd really love to hear you guys talk more about that. Thanks in advance, and I'd look forward to more of the podcast. Honestly, I can't... other than the post-Infinity War discussion...
I mean, I'm happy to spend this time talking about my obsession with Schitt's Creek right now and how I'm hardcore shipping.
we're already at 50 minutes, so...
And you haven't seen the fourth season, so it's just going to be me talking about how excited I am.
Oh, well.
I have a lot of feelings.
I mean, that's what we should do next time, is just talk about shipping and whatever.
Oh, we should.
Let's do it. So the answer is, we've drunk and slept since then, but I'm very glad you found this terrible hellhole, and I hope you find it useful. All right, final Tumblr question. Hey, ladies, love the podcast. Emoji thumb up. My question is about how best to network. As a writer, I find myself most comfortable at my desk working on my manuscript. However, I'm sure there's plenty of benefits to building strong relationships within the writing publishing community. Any recommendations on how authors can network efficiently without having to go to lots of conferences/conventions? The internet, yes. My friend.
Twitter is a hellhole, but it's still really good.
It's a useful hellhole.
Yes.
Honestly, like, Tumblr,
yeah.
I mean, there's still some people on LiveJournal and DreamWidth. Like, there's
somehow
there are many places you can go on the internet and find connection with other writers, and I encourage you as an indoor cat to find them, because they exist, they're being used, and
you think about it as finding other writer friends rather than networking.
Yeah. All you're doing is trying to find connections to people who are going through the same thing as you, who can maybe give you advice, but who can be with you on that journey.
Yeah. And I assume that many of your real life friends do not understand the pains of the writer life. And so part of this is just looking for people who understand what you mean when you say, oh, God, I can't figure out how to deal with this character. Or, oh, I got another rejection today and this sucks. So it's part of it is just finding people you can commiserate with.
And it's not going to happen right away. It's not going to happen right away. But, you know, as with anything, like, you keep trying at it and, you know, it'll come together.
Yeah. It's kind of a slow process. But if you find people who you find interesting and whose writing you like.
It's like writing a novel. It doesn't happen in the first day.
Mm.
It happens over time and in little increments. And then sometimes there are setbacks. And sometimes you write 5,000 words in one day and you're like, oh my God, I'm a golden god. And then you write
200 words and you hate them all.
Exactly. All right. Well, since we did only questions this episode, I think we can just skip straight to what are you reading?
I am still staring at Melmoth on my nightstand and afraid to pick it up. So that's where I am. I actually have not been reading a lot lately because I made the terrible mistake of downloading a crossword puzzle app on my tablet.
Oh,
and so I have lost so much time.
You goofed, friend.
I can't stop doing crossword puzzles.
See, I never got addicted to crossword puzzles because I'm real bad at them.
It's really interesting because this app categorizes them by the person who made them. And so I found one that I really, really loved because they used a lot of different pop culture and like internet savvy
like that episode
words.
Of Brooklyn Nine-Nine where there was the anyway sorry
I don't recall but so this
they go to a puzzle night at a bar.
So this one I really liked this one, but there was only the one bundle, and so then now I've had to use the other ones, and they keep asking me sports questions, and I'm like, I don't know who won the World Series in 1972. I was not alive then. I do not
Sadly,
care.
Sadly, the Red Sox won it this year, and I'm very sad about it, but...
So I have lost a lot of time to crossword puzzles over the past 2 weeks, and I kind of need to stop, especially when I get annoyed, because I'm like, okay, learn a new word. You've used this word in every single one of your puzzles that I've done in this bundle. Stop it. Then you've used the same clue for it. I'm like, unto. They keep using golden rule preposition. I'm like, stop it. Come up with a new clue. Come up with a new word.
Yeah.
So anyway, what I'm reading right now is crossword puzzle clues.
We're in a dark place.
What about you, Jen?
Currently, so I finished reading I finished doing my reread for the paper. Mm-hmm. Realized somehow halfway through Doomsday Book that I had never read Doomsday Book.
Oh, and I just thought I had,
which was great because I was just like full weeping. The most depressing of the Connie Willis talks for time travel books. But it helped that I had gotten upgraded in my Sirens room. So I was in this like stately pleasure dome. I had a fireplace and this like gigantic sectional sofa. It was and a balcony. It was bonkers.
Awesome.
It was bonkers. So I read Doomsday Book, and then on the way back from Sirens, I read, I decided to give the Grishaverse trilogy another try, because I had loved, Six of Crows, and I loved Crooked Kingdom, and I always sort of thought of, like, I didn't really love Shadow and Bone, and then I reread it, and I was like, oh, no, I love it. So then I ordered the next two, like, while I was on the plane.
Okay.
And now
I loved Six of Crows, haven't read Crooked Kingdom, because I'm bad at finishing series. I liked Shadow and Bone, but I was also like, I find The Darkling extremely boring.
Well, I think I only ever read Shadow and Bone, and then was just like, I don't need to read the next two because I didn't love Shadow and Bone.
Yeah.
But I actually find that after reading Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom, I appreciate Shadow and Bone a lot better.
Okay.
So now I'm excited to get in and figure out what the deal is. So
yeah,
they're coming sometime in the next couple days. We'll see.
The future.
And then right now I'm reading another Connie Willis book, Bellwether, which is one of her non-time travel books.
Okay.
Very excited about it. And I'm going to World Fantasy on Thursday, so
that's all fun.
Of this is meaningless. Awesome. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening, and to everyone who submitted questions and comments. You can always give us suggestions for topics for episodes at shippingandhandlingpodcast@gmail.com or via Twitter or on our Tumblr ask box, where you can ask anonymously. If you feel moved to do so, please support us by giving us a donation on Ko-fi. We can't give you anything but our love, but we appreciate it very much.
We will also give you a shout out.
You will get a shout out, and we will be very excited for like an incongruous number of minutes. Like, literally every time it happens, I was like, Bridget, look at all my
money.
And if you enjoy this podcast, please tell your friends. And
yeah,
I guess thank you very much. Happy reading.
Bye.